Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The story of a ruthless big shot, Willie Stark.
And for the last time, I tell you that nobody, if you hear me, nobody will tell me how to run this state.
His manners, his morals.
I'm going to stay in this race. I'm on my own and I'm out for blood.
Dirt's a funny thing. Some of it rubs off on everybody.
Willie was right. Man is conceived in sin and born in corruption.
Gamblers and crooks fought for his favor, but a fearless few risked ruin to destroy him.
Be it resolved by the House of Representatives, in open session convened, that said Willie Stark be, and he is hereby, impeached!
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Little outtake from a 1949 movie, All the King's Men. Time moves on, and time moves backwards. Can you play the music louder? They don't even hear what I'm saying here. I'm thinking out loud. Let them. Can you play the music louder? I can't hear it. What, am I going deaf? I'll break that record. I don't want to hear it. That's awful. All the King's Men. Rise and Fall of a Backwoods Rebel, the story of the rule and abuse of power of Louisiana's colorful state governor and former U.S. Senator Huey Long, the Kingfish. Now, of course, it was played by Broderick Crawford, who I used to love in the movie, in the TV series Highway Patrol. But that's not why we're talking about All the King's Men. We're talking about it because of what's going on today in the political world. And the Willie Stark movie, the character Willie Stark from the movie All the King's Men, in it, to get to power, he promises things that he could never deliver. Does that sound familiar? Listen to clip one.
This much I swear to you. These things you shall have. I'm going to build a hospital. The biggest money can buy. And it will belong to you. That any man, woman, or child who is sick or in pain can go through those doors and know that everything will be done for them that man can do. To heal sickness, to ease pain, free, not as a charity, but as a right. And it is your right, do you hear me? It is your right. And it is your right that every child should have a complete education. That any man who produces anything can take it to market without paying toll. And no poor man's land or farm can be taxed or taken away from him. And it is the right of the people that they shall not be deprived of hope.
All right, so hope. You hear that? They shall not be deprived of hope. Now, I don't know whether the Barack Obama campaign took some of his rhetoric from All the King's Men, but it may as well have been taken from All the King's Men. For those of you who think it's all fresh and new, I just want you to know we've heard it before. Some of us older guys who have been around have a bit of a small memory for these things. And I think that mankind should not be deprived of a fillet of soul, frankly. I mean, never mind a hospital. If I am deprived of a good lunch, I am frankly more concerned than I am about a good hospital. Because on a regular basis, I need a good lunch and a good walk more than I need a good hospital. And consequently, I walk around a district here in San Francisco sometimes with my camera. Today, I didn't have the camera, but I had a great lunch anyway. And there's some new pictures up that I took a couple of weeks ago in the, they call it the Barbary Coast area, the red brick building area where the, it's a very interesting area. I happen to like the red brick building area of San Francisco. It's a former seaport, and you can feel it. I can feel it in the pavement. I can feel it in the bricks. I always have been drawn to this area. It's the nautical maritime thing in me that resonates with it. For example, the bay used to come up to a street. Of course, it's been filled in. It used to come up to Battery Street, and then they filled it in. But there was a time that ships would tie up at some of these buildings and unload their products. There's a place here I never drink in it called the Old Ship Saloon, which I photographed for you and put up on my Savage's Eye camera. There actually was a ship that was that sank there, that they turned into a saloon somewhere around after the Civil War. And then it became a red brick hotel for, you know, seamen who were Shanghai here. They would get him drunk in these bars, knock him over the head, and put him on a ship. The same way liberal voters are Shanghaied on a regular basis by the political powers that be, with promises of hospitals and education and things of that nature. But if you want to take a look at the pictures, they're up on my website. It's becoming a very interesting little subsite within the Savage Nation. We get about 125,000 uniques a day, 135,000, and now we're getting about 20,000 uniques going right to the iCamera, which is interesting. It's just a hobby of mine, not a moneymaker, but a hobby, and I enjoy it very much. So as I say, where can you buy? Where in this world can you walk around on your own, watch the world go round, so to speak, partake in the symphony of life on a minor scale? I'll give you an example. So I'm walking the streets. I see it wasn't a policeman, but it was like a guy in uniform. They backed the truck up to an ambulance. An ambulance's battery died. And all they did was connect wires up to the ambulance to start it. No one was in it. And I stood there as they said to her, the ambulance driver, all right, crank it over a few times. So I stopped with the wires, and you go, I actually was hanging on the cranking, and when it started, I felt good and walked on. Now, what does that make me? Does that make me a kind of personality of some kind that likes this kind of thing? I felt good about humanity helping humanity. They didn't get any money out of it. It wasn't the government coming out to help the woman whose ambulance stopped. It was some nice people who stopped with the thing and came with the wires from a truck and helped an ambulance that stopped. And I started to think about politics with regard to that, which is that the essence of being a decent, civilized human being is extending the hand of kindness to a fellow man who may need something small or something large. I was thinking about that. So I said, well, then how do I differ from a liberal who also wants to simply help the more needy than himself? I said, well, the difference is that I believe in helping others on my own volition. The liberal believes we should be forced to help others, that the government has an obligation to take from those who have and give to those who don't have. And that's where we disagreed on that. But it's not that I don't want to help the downtrodden. I mean, I've done my share in my little way of helping people and helping nature as best I could over the years, having to first think about myself and my family, to be frank. Because if I am not for myself, who am I? The answer is nobody. And nobody would help me if I hadn't helped myself. But the fact is, yeah, I can do more, and I probably will, but I don't want the government taking any more from me than they already take. They take over 50% of every dollar I make. 50 cents of every dollar is taken from me before I get it and given to people. I don't even think it goes to the poor. I'm pretty sure it doesn't. Most of it's wasted. And that's enough for me. You know what I'm saying? So here we are on Friday. It's Rock and Roll Friday. We got through another week together. And then I ambled up to a restaurant I rarely eat in, but I ate in it again. I was in the mood for a quick, good lunch. Where else but in San Francisco and North Beach can you slide into a restaurant? In the rest of the country, they call it filet of sole. Here they call it – I always forget what they call it here. It's basically a flounder anyway. What do they call it? Petrolli sole, they call it. Petrolli sole. It's a flat fish that flaps on the bottom of the bay, probably full of toxins. I happen to like it. So I went in for $11.50. I got fish, I got spaghetti, and I got vegetables, and I got bread. How much better can it get than this? The answer is I asked for chopped garlic with oil, and it got even better. Yeah, it got better again. And then I walked back to the radio station, and here I am. And some of the things I see along the way are up on my website. You say, well, why are you talking about this? You should be talking about politics, Michael. Look, I'm going to tell you something. If you've heard a distinct change in my show over the last few weeks or months, it's because there's been a distinct change in my show over the last few weeks or months. I'm going through a metamorphosis internally, and it's because I am completely jaundiced by the political system. If the best the Republicans can produce is John McCain, And the best the Democrats can produce are the others. I really don't want to talk much more about it. Of course, I will from time to time, as need be, Tuesday again, you know, when they have the big Texas, the blah, blah, blah. But I find it insulting to spend so much time talking about a primary like this when most of us haven't even been able to give our opinion as to who we think is fit to be president. I find it insulting. But this is media-driven. It's ratings-driven. And speaking about media and ratings, I'm in the media, and I live and fall by ratings. I happen to enjoy for 14 years great ratings, or I wouldn't be in business, and I wouldn't have almost 400 stations. So you say, well, okay, so how is this going to affect your ratings? Are they going to go down because everyone's talking about politics and you're not, to the extent they are? I don't know. I really don't know, but I know that my mind is going black. It's dying. I can't do it. So I'm going to do more of what I actually think about, you know, walking the streets, taking pictures of the shadows and the buildings and the people, talking about things I see and eating me, you know, talking about food, because I think it's all very interesting to me, and I hope it's interesting to you. And if there's a political point to be made along the way, so be it. So be it. So as I say, this district that I happen to favor, the red brick area, the red brick building area, I've always wanted to buy a building here and never did. I should have, I could have. Why didn't I? There's one I know that has a Starbucks that I could have bought for $800,000. Now who knows what it is, $3 million, $5 million. I don't know what they're worth. But property comes, you know, property ownership comes with a burden as well, as you well know. I own property in houses, and it's constant. I've never seen anything like it. I'm a fanatic property maintainer. So I maybe I'll get a red brick building one of these days and do my show out of it. Who knows? But I love walking around here because I can feel the semen, S-E-A-M-E-N, in the brick. Sorry, that could have been misinterpreted. It is a family show, and I am walking on Broadway, and it could easily be misinterpreted. But there is human goodness, is what I'm saying. Do you understand what I'm saying? Even a man helping, a couple of guys helping an ambulance driver with a jump start, that's human goodness. Do you understand that? I like that. It made me feel good. But I don't like giving bums anything. I don't want to give them any money. And the reason is because they have a character weakness that has put them in the street. And no matter what you give them, they're either going to put it up their arm or drink it. And the government spends, in this city alone, the last I checked, over $200 million a year in bum services. That's quite enough. Quite enough for the bum services. I don't want to give them any more money. It's like giving sugar to the ants. It only attracts more ants. I'll be right back. Savage.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
In many ways, I am San Francisco. In many ways, I am Mr. San Francisco. It's a funny thing, but if you think the wackos really represent the city, you're mistaken. I meet the regular people, the people who built the city, not these, you know, these other types. But, you know, hey, look, it's a big world. There's a place for everybody, so who cares? You know, we live in a great country. We're not living in Uganda where they take a machete to each other, so we ought to be thankful for that. We're not living in the the Yugoslavia where they slaughtered each other because they were a different religion. I mean, God, you have no idea how lucky you are in this country. You don't. Most of you don't. You have no idea what a great nation it is. And why there should be such hatred for this country from the American left is bewildering to me. And the only answer is that liberalism is a mental disorder. I mean, there's no other answer for it. To hate this country with such vigor as they do is a sign of mental illness. And to let people who are mentally ill pull the country around by its nose is unbelievable to me. But as I say, they don't bother me. They can go to heck. You know, I don't really care. So I walk around and I avoid people. Some I talk to, some I don't. And speaking of which, so I'm walking around today, and after lunch, I stopped in my friend O'Reilly's bar, which I haven't been in a while, and my friend Miles was there. And, you know, we talked for a long while, and he told me about the Scots and the Irish and the English and the whole story. And because I said to him, what is the hatred there over? I said, is it originally religious in Belfast, the Irish versus the English, the Protestants versus the Catholics? He said, well, not really. It's somewhat that, but there is a difference between the fact that many of the Protestants were Scots, and then the what Cromwell did, where he drove whole villages over cliffs, broke their skulls. I mean, he said, you know, terrible things that you can't even imagine were done to the Irish. I said, no kidding. I said, people haven't any idea how vicious humanity, how the inhumanity of man to man. There's nothing in this country compared to what went on in the world and what goes on in the world. And, you know, just the interchange between me and an educated man who really knows something about reality and history is, frankly, it's like I love this kind of thing. And that's why I tend not to talk to people, because if I can't get a person to know a little bit more than the surface, I don't want to talk with them. I'd rather, you know, rub my dog's nose, you know, or be alone with the camera or watch the seagulls. I love the Bay. I mean, the reason I love the Bay is that I could tell you right now, when I go out on my boat this weekend, I go to an area and I could show you where the new seals are, the baby seals. I see them being born every year. I know where their pups are, and I know where the new seagulls are. I watch them glide over the bay as the parents teach them how to fish, unlike some of the parents in America who are not there for their children. They don't even teach them how to go to school, let alone how to fish. They tell them the government will throw them a fish instead of teaching them how to fish. So I get a lot out of things if I do it my way. But I got to tell you, it's increasingly difficult. I got to lay it on the line. I'm under a lot of mental stress lately. What the exact reasons are, I don't know whether it's personal or political. I can't tell anymore. But I'm feeling enormous stress inside my soul. I sense a change coming in America that we're not going to be ready for. I sense a country that's going to change so rapidly in the next 3 or 4 years that it'll be unrecognizable from the country it is. I sense that we're walking around in the last days of true freedom. And I mean particularly in the radio industry, which has problems, financial and otherwise. But not the only problem is in this business are financial. I'm very fortunate in that I don't have financial problems in this business. Others do. I am doing great, and so is the syndicator I work for. I don't want to get into it, but I can tell you right now, the landscape of the media is going to change dramatically. The landscape of your freedoms is going to be a different landscape, quite a different landscape, is what I say. Again, I'm out of time, just as I develop an idea. It's Friday, for God's sakes. Can't we have like a something on a Friday where I could just ramble on and on about a filet of sole or something? I'm still getting over the lunch. It was so good. I all I want to do now is have a coffee, and I don't have one here in the studio. I will not drink radio station coffee. It's like if you tell me you have coffee in a styrofoam cup, I would rather not. Thank you very much. But I will be back to discuss politics and man in a moment.
Savage.
Beyond the sea,
it is the Savage Nation. It's Friday, smile. No one's coming after you with a machete. You live in a great country. Forget the nutcases. Forget the liberal maniacs. It's all hyperbole anyway. They don't rule anything. Goldman Sachs rules everything. Or Bear Stearns. Certain way, it's not so bad when you let Wall Street run everything. Excuse me, I'm back on the air, of course. So here we are, we're just talking. I think I'll tell you some corny jokes that are suitable for families, because these are jokes you could tell. This, I call them salesman's jokes. Now, as you know, I'm a guy who does things on the natch. But every once in a while, I hear a salesman's joke that makes me laugh, and I can tell it to ordinary people and get a rise out of, a happy laugh out of anybody. So here's one. 80-year-old man goes to a doctor. Doctor says, what's your problem? He says, doctor, I want you to lower my sex drive. Doctor says, lower your sex drive? He says, but you're 80. Most men your age, when they come to me, they want me to raise their sex drives. The guy says, he points to his head. He said, yes, doctor, but I want you to lower my sex drive from here, pointing to his head, to here, pointing south. It's funny. Everybody laughs at that joke. I have another one that's equally bad. I mean, these are not great jokes, but they're pleasant, they're polite, they're nice. Nice is good. Goodness between people is even greater. I'm fundamentally a nice person. The truth is I've always helped people, and you get backed into a corner. When you're a conservative, people start to make you into something you're not. When you're a conservative, the liberals who control the media paint pictures of you that are not real. They make you into the boogeyman. They make you into the monster that's really inside all of our souls. You understand that? Now, you could say, well, I do the same thing about them. But the difference is, when I declared liberalism as a mental disorder, I really was saying they need help rather than they should be condemned. They need help. They need real help. I'm telling you right now, anyone who hates this country, the way these leftists seem to hate this country, and I can name some of the groups, Code Pink for one, MoveOn.org for two, the National Lawyers Guild, the ACLU, when they hate this country the way they do, you know they're mentally ill. And I've met enough of these types of people to tell you they're sick. You can see the way they look. They usually foam somewhere at the corners of their mouth. Their clothing is usually filthy. They don't take care of themselves. They're mentally ill. And unfortunately, they gravitate to the legal profession. Tucson, Arizona. Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was hoping to brighten your Friday with a good story. I met a lady in the parking lot that was listening
to
your
radio. This is a family show, sir.
What's that?
It's a you said you met a lady in a parking lot, and I said this is a family show.
Oh, yeah. She was listening to your radio program, a little French immigrant lady. And
yeah.
I was listening to the fact she was listening to your program, and I looked at her and said, are you listening to Dr. Savage? And the look on her face was like I caught her stealing or something. She looked up as she turned the radio down, and she apologized to me, and I started laughing. I said, oh, no, ma'am. I said, I love Dr. Savage. He's great. And she got into some stories about her French culture and coming from France, and, I mean, the praises that she had for you and how accurate you were and the way you described, you know.
Now why did she turn the show off, do you think? Because, what, she was afraid you were a hater of the show?
More than likely. That's what I mean. She kind of had that embarrassed, like, you know, she got caught doing something she shouldn't have.
Well, she sounds like a nice lady, also very shy. And how did it end up? Okay, or someone pulled a gun out in the parking lot?
No. She was kind of woman you'd want to, you know, go have a drink with and chat.
Hold it now. As I said, it's a family show. We can't go there. Well, how old a woman was she, Todd?
Oh, she was probably in her, I'd say 70s.
But she was French, so therefore the rules still apply.
<Very good.
laughs> Hey, thanks for thinking of me. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. It's a light day. Play another Bobby Darin. You did it already beyond the sea. What else do we have for him? Of him.
Every night I hope
who's this? That's not Bobby Darin. This is Bobby Darin? I don't like it. I'm not into it. Let me hear something that reminds me of a 57 Chevy, two four-barrel carburetors, fins. Give me, like, I don't know. Give me Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. There you go. That's it. Give me something, a real throwback song. I want throwback. I want muscle car music. I don't want to hear about senior sins. Makes you want to get out in a convertible, doesn't it, and race around? All right, turn it off. We're having too much good feelings here on the Savage Nation. I've got to get the angst going in order to keep the audience listening. I got to get them angry, I suppose. But I may not be doing much more of it. I am so beyond anger. I am so beyond rage at the political machine. I am so beyond wanting to change the Democrat or Republican parties that I could care less. I become apathetic at this point. I may change. Don't call me and tell me not to be apathetic. It's the greatest crime. All right. I understand that. I may continue to talk about Filet of Sol and my dog for a while and the red brick buildings and how I can feel the semen in the brick. I mean, S-E-A-M-E-N, the semen in the brick. It was an area where the semen were waylaid over the years. They go into their bars, get you know, knockout drops, next thing they'd be put on a ship somewhere. And I could feel this in this area, the Barbary Coast. You walk down these streets, it's filled with, like, art galleries, antique stores, a lot of lawyers for some reason. Thankfully, most of them went out of business in the last year, and the buildings are vacant. But they were formerly, like, little hotels for seamen and, you know, prostitutes, dance halls, that kind of thing here in San Francisco from the Gold Rush era. The buildings date to, like, you know, Civil War, post-Civil War period. I've always liked, even when I went to St. Louis, I'd go to the Gas Lamp District. If I went to Seattle 20 years ago, I'd always go to Old Town. I always liked Old Town. Old Town, Old Town. Whatever city I'm in, I go to the Old Town. Why is that? Like, when I went to Quebec when I was a youngster, I used to love Quebec because of the feeling of the old city. Of old Quebec, the paving stones, the Chateau Frontenac. I used to love shooting down that what do they call that? Where you go in like a sled, a toboggan run they had at the hotel. Wow. You get a bottle of brandy, you drink half of it, and you get in the toboggan. Before you know it, it's you're sailing along and you're having fun. So here we are, here we are, here we are. What do you want me to do? Politics, food, music, science, poetry, global warming, how to care for children, vitamins, the care and feeding of children, as I say. Anything you want me to talk about would be great. I think that the time for liberals and conservatives in this country to come together and defeat the Islamofascists before it's too late is really upon us. Unless the radical liberal comes to understand that his greatest enemy is not the conservative, but the Islamofascist who would stone him to death, cut his throat, this country is doomed because a house divided cannot stand. Now, I'm not the one to pull everyone together. It's impossible for me to do it. I wish I could. I wish I had the power. I wish I had the power to reach through those distorted lenses where the eye that alters, alters all. There's no way to fix people who are so blinded with hatred. You can't fix them. I've met people who are blind with hatred, and they scare me. I've met people like that in my lifetime, particularly when I was younger. I'd get into situations that I couldn't get out of, and it was really frightening to get in those places. And to then extricate yourself from them is not easy. And I've been around people who have no reason. And I don't like people who have no reason. To me, that's a form of human life that's a place I don't want to go to, okay? Austin, Texas. Greg, welcome to the Savage Nation. What would you like me to talk about today?
Hey, Michael. I was just calling because I was listening to you talking about stopping off in one of the restaurants in San Francisco. I used to live in Menlo Park, and I left the California world and left my job. I used to work for one of the big television stations down in Burbank, and just got out and became a baker out in Austin, Texas.
A so baker? You left the media and became a baker. Are you glad you did it?
I am glad I did it. I'll tell you, it's rough. I just unloaded 400 pounds of flour as I was waiting for you to pick up the phone. But
But what I'm saying is when you bake, do you feel like you're doing something useful and good?
Yeah, not only that, Michael, I have a bunch of kids who work for me, and they're just, you know, trying to make their way through life, and I give them advice when I can, and just one of those, you know, small businessmen you talk about often, and here I am, you know, doing what you've talked about.
Yeah, but you left the media. The point is you left the media, and you went into something fundamentally real.
Absolutely. It was two reasons for that. One was the fact that I had issues with, you know, what I was doing. The other fact was the travel I had to do. So I had a family and kids, and I decided I'd get home and try to do something.
I never met a baker who wasn't a fundamentally down-to-earth decent. I never met a bad baker in my life. There's something about dough. I think dough is like a tranquilizer. When I walk past a certain pizza parlor that I know here in the city, and I can smell the dough. Before they even bake it, there's like little round pizzas ready to go. You know how they roll the dough and they put them on the wooden boards?
Absolutely.
Or when you smell that dough starting up, what better smell is there in the world? I don't know of it, my friend. Thanks for the call. That's all. I'm sorry if I am boring you, but until further notice, I refuse to talk Democrat-Republicanism. I will not do it. Until further notice, I am going to filibuster on the radio, and I'm going to reinvent talk radio, because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to say something to the listener and to those in this business, and I know I'm listened to by virtually everybody in this business from time to time, and that's because I'm different, and you got to listen to the guy who's performing who's different. Whether you like him or not is irrelevant. You got to ask, what the heck is this guy doing that they're listening to, and why? How could it be? What is he doing that's different and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So let me explain something to you, and it's really interesting what I'm about to say. The whole concept of hundreds of people doing talk radio on a daily basis around the country, I don't think this can go on for forever. I really don't. And I saw this when I began in radio 15 years ago. You ask the people I work with at that local station. I saw conglomeration coming, and I knew I had to get into syndication. I knew I had to get in there fast. I said, there's going to be 5 to 10 people left in this whole business, and I want to be in the winner's circle. Now, at this point, I have the third largest show in the country, which is quite a victory when you consider that it's late in the day, the audiences are smaller than they are earlier, and the audience that I have is not only in size of interest, but the loyalty is beyond comprehension. It's more than an audience per se. It's very different as an audience. But what I'm saying is, look, let's put it in another context. The Academy Awards, 3.5 hours. Why are the ratings collapsing? Well, you could say it's because the movies aren't as good. That's not the reason. It's because America has changed. Who in the world is going to set aside 3.5 hours in the day to sit and watch the Academy Awards from the beginning to the end? Virtually only those in the business, and even fewer those. The day of this assignation that you're going to be there for 3.5 hours is over for the Academy Awards. And what they got to do is they got to cut out awards for, like, the lighting man and the camera, you know, maybe a photographer. But, you know, the average person is tuning in to see the stars either make a fool of themselves or be gracious, one or the other. That's all they really want to see. A one-hour Academy Awards show would be something people would probably listen to. Now, that what does that have to do with talk radio? Same thing here. I think the age of the three-hour format show, except for me, is going to be diminished very soon because I don't think people can sustain listening to anybody for 3 hours a day. How many times can you hear the same thing in the same in one day? Everybody goes on to the internet in this business. Everybody clicks on the same stories, and depending upon where they are on the political spectrum, they'll give you their perspective. But what is so newsy about it? I mean, that you can't get in 3 seconds on the internet. So people can either get it on their telephone, they can get the news on a telephone, they can get it on the internet. So radio's going through a change, and it has been. Everybody knows that. But nobody really knows how it's going to end up. And what I'm saying to you is that if you want a long-format talk show of the type that I do, it cannot be 3 hours of politics. It's impossible. I'm very fortunate in that I'm kind of like an old-style raconteur. They used to call a man like me a Renaissance man. That phrase went out the window with the age of specialty. But when I was young, being called a Renaissance man was quite a compliment. Or being called a raconteur was considered quite a compliment. You don't hear those words anymore. It's a different era. I'm lucky. I have a very, very broad range of interests. I have read a phenomenal number of books. I have a doctorate. I have 2 master's degrees, and that's important. I am a father. So I have been around. I've traveled widely. I've collected plants. I've done science, things of that nature. And I can bring that into this show. The question is, how much longer do I have the capacity to do this? I don't really have an answer for you. I don't know. I'm going through a change. I don't have a fixed idea. Can I do 3 hours forever? Can I do 2 hours? Can I do 1 hour? Do I want to do a Walter Winchell 1 hour a week? Well, they'll say you can't make any money an hour a week. I guarantee you, if I did 1 hour a week, my audience would be 10 times as large as it is for 3 hours a day, and it would maybe wash out in the same way. I don't really know where it's going to go. And I know that everything's changing. That's all I'm saying. So we can talk about anything you want. But remember, here are my interests. Okay, let's go down the list now, because I said it to someone. They said, well, what are your interests? I'm not going to say it's in this order, but here are some of my interests. I guess they were talking about advertisers. Okay, beer, wine, boats, cars, guns, ammunition, photography. I'm giving you examples of things that I actually am interested in. Dogs. I'm interested in dogs. Food, certainly. Food cooking. You know, these are the things I like that I'm interested in that organically attract me that I can do. I can do any one of those things. And so, for example, one last little thing on the way out the door before the commercial break. Coming into San Francisco today to do my show, Wilhelm actually peeled rubber coming out of the toll booths. I didn't mean to. Here's this 5,000-pound Mercedes with a 12-cylinder engine. I don't know. I have a competitive streak in me, and I shouldn't even drive. I really shouldn't even be in a car. I should have a driver. Because when I go through the toll booth where you have to slow down to have it read the thing, I get angry if the guy next to me in an old, like a less powerful car, uses that as an opportunity to get ahead of me. I shouldn't react. But I know they're going to do it each and every time I slow down. He'll speed up to shoot ahead of me and get ahead of me on the road, and I can't tolerate that. So I command Wilhelm to charge ahead, and Wilhelm peels rubber, and before long, I'm ahead of the guy who tried to beat me. I'll be right back. Savage.
I I will conduct a respectful debate. Now, it'll be dispirited. It'll be spirited because there are stark differences. I'm a proud conservative liberal conservative Republican. Hello. Easy there. Let me say this. I am a proud conservative Republican.
Oh, stop, John, please.
And both of my possible or likely opponents today.
Stop it, please. He said this will be a dispirited debate. And then he says, I'm a conservative liberal Republican. Oh, my God. Marty, Honolulu, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you amaze me. I don't know where you get the inner strength for self-control and how you control and your language when you have such an ability to cipher agendas through all the Bravo Sierra. I'm talking from the right, from the left, from every direction. And you have a national audience. How do you get the self-control that you exercise?
You mean, I don't know what you mean by self-control. To do what?
Well, you know, I flew all the way to Concord to see you live. And I would love to see you in a smaller venue and just, you know.
You mean like a nightclub level thing?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I feel that you're controlling sometimes what you really want to say.
Oh, you mean you'd like me to really let loose on stage like I did at the Concord Pavilion? I got very close there. The first act was very good. The second act was okay. The third act, I had too much to drink, I admit.
Well, I loved seeing the Cadillac go off stage, and I loved seeing Little Teddy when he was young. But, you know, on another note, I'm also...
Oh, my God. You know, I had my little dog on stage when he was a puppy. I have a picture of him. He was all black. He weighed about a pound. I looked at that picture. I can't believe it's 4 years ago. He's a gray guy now. He looks like a little goat, and he's about 10 pounds. And 10 pounds of pure, unadulterated spirit. Thank you. It's true. So a friend says to me in the streets of San Francisco today, he says, so, Michael, I guess you're not going to be running for the presidency. I said, no, I'm running from the presidency. And that was that. And that's today. And here I am. And I'll be back to talk about all these topics and less right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Some of the stories that were pulled today on the Savage Nation. Drinking makes heart grow more sorrowful, study finds. The age-old belief goes that alcohol helps people drown their sorrows, but in truth, the bottle only makes bad memories linger, a Japanese study said Friday. Researchers at the University of Tokyo concluded that ethanol does not cause memory to decrease, as widely believed, but instead locks it in place. Well, they use rats, you know. This is why I was in the research business for a while. Rats are not man, and that's why these studies have no meaning. So therefore, let me take the whole thing back. Waste of your time. Next story. San Francisco nightclub safety law in works. This is a scream. Responding to a recent spike in violent crimes, i.e. we have a homicide record being broken on a daily basis here. In and around San Francisco's popular nightclub, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced new legislation intended to make the venue safer. Under the proposed legislation, it would be illegal to loiter within 10 feet of a club for more than 3 minutes between the hours of who's going to have the clock waiting? Between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m., if you're there for more than 3 minutes, you get arrested? What is this? I don't get this. I really don't understand this. The announcement Thursday was similar to one he made last year when he outlined new safety crackdowns along the Broadway corridor in North Beach, where fights, muggings, and underage drinking were all increasing. Well, as far as I'm concerned, just put more cops in the streets, bigger cops, not chick cops. Put them out there with nightclubs and let them start swinging the clubs, and you'll see crime go down like miraculously. You know, get rid of the PC police and put out the big guys. You'll see the crime go down and give them the rights to do what they have to do, and then the crime diminishes. You don't have to come up with these cockamamie rules. You can't be there 3 minutes outside of a nightclub. Who comes up with these things? Anyway, Prince's cover in Afghanistan blown by Drudge Report. They say that Harry has to come home now. He's having a good time killing a Taliban. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. I would rather talk about Petrolli's soul than the soul of the nation, frankly, right now. So let's go to the callers. Betsy, Chicago, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, first of all, I want to thank you. I've been listening for a long time. I have been liberal, progressive all my life, and I am just appalled at what political correctness has done. It's become fascism. We cannot talk about truth anymore. You're one of the only people that actually investigates and speaks from your heart, and I know how hard that is because people hate it when you do it.
Well, some love it when I do it. I have people come up to me. They say with almost tears in their eyes, you speak for me. I had two men today stop me in the streets. You know, if I'm walking and I usually walk alone and a guy comes up from behind and says to me, are you Michael Savage? I usually don't answer them because I don't know who they are. I'll turn around slowly and I'll say what might be on your mind rather than saying yes or no. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Well, the guy will say, oh, I just want to say to you, you know, you speak for me and everyone, I can't tell you. And I notice, okay, so the guys are white males generally, over 40. And I say, well, guess what? But we all vote. And this is what is really eating at me. One of the largest constituencies of voters, if not the largest constituency of voters in this country, is the white male voter. And he has been ignored completely up until now. By Obama, by Hillary, and by McCain. Do you know that? Do you realize they're not even talking to the base of the country? I don't care what people say or think. I know the demographics of America. It's still primarily white male, incidentally. And we all vote. And we all vote when we want to. And yet not once would McCain come here and meet the Savage Nation. Instead, he panders to every group in the world. You know? So I have my reasons for withdrawing into Petrolli's soul. Thank you for the call. Can I give anybody advice on something, perhaps? Maybe advice would be good on some topic. Jack, KNEW, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, doctor. I'm a major aficionado of the government.
Good. I'm glad you're an aficionado, and you vote. Let's not forget it. When people come on the show and say, hi, Mike, I love your show, and I vote. So what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to tell you my favorite pet load for the old 45 in terms of social application. And
yes, what might that be?
I worked up a load years ago, and Hornady is now loading it. It's the 200 grain XTP custom plus P load. It gets about 1060 feet per second.
But if I buy a box of, let's say, standard issue cartridges for my 45, what am I getting, 180 grain?
Well, you can get everything from little 185 grain hollow points to 230 hard ball usually, but I like the 200 grain XTP. It's a truncated cone hollow point, feeds really well, and just brutal, you know, and about 500 foot pounds of muzzle energy.
Well, that's what you need in San Francisco. You need at least 500 foot pounds of muzzle energy.
It works for me.
All right, thank you. I have at least 5,000 pounds of muzzle energy every day on the microphone. How many pounds of muzzle energy do you need for talk radio for 3 hours a day? Where do I get this muzzle energy from? I'd like to know. It's almost like I don't know where it comes from. You know, I tell you why I don't like talking to people I don't know. Unless I run into somebody I haven't seen for a while, a guy says to me, oh, boy, I don't know how you do it. I don't want to hear that from anybody. I never want to hear anyone say to me, I don't know how you do it. It weakens me. I don't want to hear, I don't know how you do it. I'm not you. I want to hear from someone, I love what you do. That's great how you can do it. I don't want to hear, I don't know how you do it. You see, that's why I got to be very careful who I talk to. I don't know, if you're in some kind of sport, you understand what I'm saying to you. If you are around the wrong people, they can drain you without even trying. They may not even know they're draining you. They may be well-intentioned, but they could say things to you that will pull energy out of you as sure as I am talking to you right now. You got to be so aware of the fact that we are an electric force. Human beings are electric. There's electricity running through our bodies. You know that. You know that. You know it's all about charge and charges of energy, and you put yourself too close to an electrical field and you can get sick, or too close to an electrical field in the right way, you could actually heal in some ways. You know that magnetism affects people. And so, therefore, there are some people who will give you a positive charge and you walk away from them feeling empowered. There are others that will suck you dry. I ran into one of them the other day. I haven't seen this guy for 10 years. I got to tell you something. I'm not going to mention him by name. I'm going to give you an example of something, of the type of people I have to avoid in my life. I saved this man from cancer 15 years ago. World War II veteran. I knew the guy from the streets. He wasn't a bad guy. He was a casual friend, and I liked him in my own way. Well, one day I had gotten a call from him that he was dying in the VA hospital. He had cancer, and he had a tumor underneath his the axis of his arm the size of a softball. So I went there, and I said, well, the doctor said that I'm hopeless. She told me to go home and die. I said, well, you know what? Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go home and live. And I gave him the Linus Pauling book on how to use megadoses of vitamin C. And never mind what you've heard from the quacks in the drug profession. Please don't pay any attention to what you've heard from the drugs who sell you drugs. Well, he went home, and he religiously followed the Cameron Pauling methodology for treating, self-treating himself when he was told he was hopeless. And it's now 10 years later. He was cured. The tumors reduced within 3-4 months. And he had gone back, I'm talking 10 years ago or more, to the VA hospital. And the doctor, who was a female doc, said to him, he comes in, and she snaps her head and says, John, what are you doing here? Meaning, I think you figure you'd be dead by now. He said, well, I've been, look at this. He said, the tumor's gone. So she says, well, okay. And he says, and I'm following the vitamin C protocol of Dr. Linus Pauling and Ewan Cameron, the Scottish surgeon. She says, well, that's all nonsense. That's all rubbish. He says, yeah, but you told me to go home and die. My friend, Dr. Savage, gave me the book and told me how to apply it, and I'm living. Well, that's nonsense. It's spontaneous remission. It wasn't nothing to do with the vitamin C. Well, tell that to him, because he's still doing it. So anyways, I haven't seen him in years. So I run into him. Instead of once saying something to me like, you know, thank you, or I'm glad, nothing. He went right into, oh, you're still doing radio? Yeah, I don't really listen to it much. You know, that kind of thing. Every statement was a mild dig, a mild drag, a mild... Because the guy has basically always been that way all of his life. Well, I was as pleasant as I could be and couldn't wait to get away from him as fast as I could. Because one thing I found in life is that drainers will suck you like a leech. I'll be back.
Savage.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
Well, with Hillary and Bill, nobody answered the phone. He was busy in the pantry. Also, she's implying that she had... Obama's right. She did have the red phone moment. And no one answered the phone many times. He was too busy in the pantry. 3:30 in the morning, the phone's ringing. Who do you want to answer it? That's a new campaign ad. They really are clueless right now. He's mopping the floor with them. He's got much better advisors than they do, I got to tell you. And he's fundamentally smarter than they are. Los Angeles, Rick, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, doctor. I appreciate your wisdom. Just curious on... I got a dichotomy in my life. I'm curious as to go with the artist in the heart or education that I have. You went with your heart, with your education.
Well, wait. Let me ask you something. What is your education and what's your training?
It's clinical psychology from a major university in Southern California.
All right. And are you licensed to practice if you wanted to?
Yes.
You're through all of those hundreds of hours of community work and the internship they make you go through to keep you out of the guild, but you're ready to go?
Yeah, about, but my heart.
All right,
is,
but wait, so what's pulling at you? What's the other side?
I just got off the phone with two of my best friends from life, 20-year naval serviceman and a major developer from Miami. And one's telling me to go with my heart, and the other is telling me the Jewish wife and father to practice education. So.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't understand. Your wife and father are saying follow your degree.
Yes. And
So what are you listening to your friends for? They don't know you as well as your parents and your wife do. Look, Rick, what's the other side? You're an artist of some sort?
Yes, in apparel.
What, you're a clothing designer?
Yes.
All right. I understand that. I'm not going to make a light of it. There's no joke here. There's no question in my mind, in the world we're living in, where earning a living is not only your first responsibility to yourself and to your family. It may be the only responsibility to yourself and your family is to make a living. Because without a living, the rest doesn't have any meaning whatsoever. You don't want to be a ward of the family or a ward of the state, do you?
No.
You've worked like heck to get that degree and to get through all of the internship. And I know how long it is because I've studied, I've talked to people who want to do what you're doing. So you're now just on the brink of being able to practice as a psychologist. What would be wrong with doing what has been done for a long 1,000 years? You have a vocation called psychology and you have an avocation called clothing design. Why can't you do the clothing design in your spare time as a hobby?
Because it's such a hit. It's such a home run that I haven't been
able
to.
You mean you get such a high off doing it? Well, so what? But you're not making a living at it.
But the dream that you did with the botanology and everything that kept you going towards
It kept me going, but I couldn't make a living doing botany. It was a trail of tears. I couldn't make a living saving the world by collecting medicinal plants. I was on a mission, but there was a certain point where I had to stop being a JC, if you know what I mean. I had to take myself off the cross spike by spike, Rick.
I know. That's why I called you. I'm really.
I'm telling you to take those spikes out of your hands and take them out of your ankles, and walk with mankind. And don't crucify yourself for humanity, meaning sacrifice yourself for the whore called art. Because she'll always leave you. She'll always leave you broken and bleeding in the street, Rick. And I'm not kidding you. I'm using harsh language for a reason. Yeah, you can follow your dreams, but they don't always wind up bread and roses, my friend.
My friend was telling me, the major developer was telling me, he's like, there's a million. It's just like the NBA, the NFL. There's a million guys that go out for those positions, and nobody sees it through except one or two or three.
What do you mean, as a psychologist?
No, just as following your dreams.
Right, that's correct. That's correct. Every little boy wants to be a famous ball player or an astronaut used to be, whatever. Maybe they want to be a hedge fund operator today. I don't know what they want to be. They all have dreams. How many wind up ball players or race car drivers or astronauts or pilots? Very few, Rick. The rest of people have to wind up doing ordinary mundane things. But if you have a special gift within you, you can take that gift and use it in psychology, Rick. That spark that you have for creation and creating can be applied in your interactions in your psychology. Are there jobs in psychology?
Not much out here unless you speak Espanol.
Well, that's another problem. But you see, that I can't help you with. I can't help you with whether, you can move also to do it. You know, you go to a place in the country where they still speak English and practice psychology. You know, it's still a good field, particularly if you've gone through all of it for a major university. Look, practice a vocation called psychology and practice your avocation on weekends and at night. And if eventually you come up with a great design, you can always get a marketing company to sell it for you downstream. But don't mix up the set and the frame in your life. Not particularly not at this particular point in your life either. I didn't say abandon your dream. I said use it as an avocation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Friday on the one and only Savage Nation. Unique show. I listen to radio. You know, I drive home at night. I listen late at night sometimes. Everyone's a little different. So here we are. Let me tell you one of the reasons I'm turning off from the political process. A, because I'm embarrassed that John McCain is the choice, that they knocked Romney out. Romney had a fighting chance to be something a little different, even though I know he's a moderate guy. He was young. He was vital. He would have been a great president, I think, and they knocked him out. They stole it from him. They switched votes and stole it from him, gave it to this old hack. The other side is an embarrassment that these two are running. Neither of them are qualified. The Democrats could have done something better, like a real statesman who we have confidence in instead of these two, okay? But then you turn to the Middle East. The Israelis are being bombarded from Gaza with rocket fire every day. The news media doesn't report it. Instead, here's a story I have to read from Reuters. As you know, Reuters is run by the descendants of the Nazis. So everything they write, although it appears to be liberal, is actually a reflection of their grandfather's SS uniform. Here's the article, Gaza, Reuters, by Nidal Al-Mughrabi, a year-old Palestinian girl. That's the opening line. A year-old Palestinian girl and a senior Hamas bombmaker were killed in the Gaza Strip on Friday as Israel pressed home airstrikes after a senior official warned Gazans they risked the Shoah if rocket fire did not stop. Now, try to deconstruct that paragraph. The Israelis are being hit with rockets every day. And the article starts with a Palestinian girl killed who was being used as a human shield by this piece of garbage, the Hamas bombmaker, who always used women and children. And nothing is going to change. So I see Netanyahu crying on Fox News, making the tour. Another one who won't come on the Savage Nation, where his core support is. Another BS politician, Netanyahu. Another one. He had his chance, and what'd he do with it? He was as corrupt and as incompetent as the rest of them, according to people I talk to. I'll tell you the truth. I'm up to here already with the whole Middle East. And why do I say that? Because if you are a sovereign nation, and you're getting hit with rockets every day, and you don't use your military, what do you want someone to do for you? Well, what are you coming here crying on Fox News about? The rockets from Gaza. You gave it back. Your great leader, the war hero, and he genuinely was a great general. Look what happened to him with corruption, because of corruption. Look what happened to the great general. The great general Sharon, a genuinely great general, winds up at the end selling his people down the river for God knows what reasons. He was compromised, I guess. Who knows? He gives back this piece of Gaza, which I warned on this show over and over again would wind up with what's happening today. How come I could figure that out and he couldn't? Why could I, an American, just sitting here looking at it all, tell you don't do it? And many people call me, oh, no, we're going to give it back. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be peace. You cannot compromise with people who want to destroy you and take you off the map. And you just look at history. They don't look at history. So I'm not interested anymore. If they have one of the most powerful air forces and militaries in the world, and they're incapable of using that for political reasons, there's nothing I can do for them anymore. That's all I can say. And, of course, when the press is that perverted that they'll write it on a year-old Palestinian girl and a senior Hamas bombmaker were killed in the Gaza Strip as Israel pressed on airstrikes. Well, wait a minute. What came first, the chicken or the egg? The Israelis gave back the Gaza Strip as a gesture of peace. What they got in return were rocket attacks into not only Sderot, but also now into Ashkelon. Ashkelon. By the way, Ashkelon is a fabulously interesting historic city. I was in Ashkelon a long time ago. I read afterwards, and Ashkelon was where Samson was shorn of his hair and blinded and was tormented in a Roman arena. I think it was in Ashkelon. And then he brought the arena down on the Romans. A great story, Victor Mature played it when I was a kid. He could have used some pec work, Victor Mature. Other than that, he did a good job. His face was believable, but not the pecs. too many years in Hollywood nightclubs, I think, for that role. They should have at least put a garment on him. But anyway, that's a subject. But Ashkelon is now getting rocketed from Gaza. What are they waiting for? An atomic bomb to go off in Jerusalem? Till they get permission from Condoleezza Rice? Rice, Aroni, Dingaling. What a Dingaling head she is. My God. What a pathetic Secretary of State. Can't Bush straighten this out already and put in a real Secretary of State who understands where our interests lie? What is this woman? So, I mean, what do you want? What can America do for you if you're in Israel and you have a leadership that won't defend your women and children? What do you want? You won't launch a ground offensive because that's too offensive. You do targeted strikes to kill the bomb maker who has someone else's little girl in the building with him so to make sure she gets killed so they can wave it around like a rag doll, the poor Palestinian child. So what do you want me to do? What else is new in warfare? There weren't innocent Japanese killed with the two atomic bombs in 1945. There weren't innocent German children killed when we firebombed half of Germany because that was a necessity because we were fighting in total war. It was them or us. And our leadership, thank God, decided better them than us. Today, we don't have a leadership that says better them than us. Today, it's, well, you give them this, maybe we'll do that, we'll bargain this, we'll make that, we'll bargain with this, we'll get a few killed. It's okay to have a few guys killed and killed. No, we can't take it. Don't you understand that's why Bush has destroyed the Republican Party? Because of the method in which he has engaged this war. His motivations were good to a certain extent. Obviously, there was graft involved in corruption and contracting. We understand that. You can't fight a war endlessly and not have the people turn on you. Look at history. Everywhere a war has gone on too long, the population has turned against the leadership. It doesn't matter where or when the war was fought. People will sustain a war if it's a war that is quick and there is victory along the way. The people will be with that leader every step of the way. But when you have a compromised leader who continuously does half measures, of course the people are going to turn around on him, as they have, and turn around on this party and then look to shills like Obama and Hillary as the salvation. You understand that? So you see why I'm not doing politics. So I'm not doing politics because I can't anymore. There's no point to it. It's pointless. You got a guy like Netanyahu, does a tour in America, another one. Again, what is he trying to do? Raise American opinion that Israel should defend itself. And he won't come on the Savage Nation either. What does that tell you about him? He's advised by the same morons who were advising the Republican Party. So what does that tell you? Who needs him? What, do I need him on the show? It's going to do something for me to have Netanyahu on my show. I don't need him. He needs me. But he doesn't even understand he needs this audience. Not Fox News. He needs you. You're the core base. You're the core base. And they won't come here any more than Republicans will. So who needs them? Why should I talk about politics? What am I going to gain by it? What are you going to gain by it? Where's the enlightenment here? Where's the advancement here? I don't see it. KNEW, Robbie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. I'm totally for you supporting Israel. I think it's a total liberal notion that we can't police the world and we shouldn't help, you know, out countries that need us to defend them against, like, bad people and bad regimes.
I don't understand what you just said. We should or shouldn't help Israel?
We should help. We are right to be in Iraq. We are a nation of cowards. This is just, you know, I'm ashamed of the fact that this country...
Robbie, I don't know what you're saying. What is your position with regard to Israel being rocketed by the Hamas from Gaza? What should they do?
They should defend themselves, and the good countries of the world should defend them. And we should, you know, also try to...
What Israel should do is use its military might and go in and clean their clock. Kill as many of the enemy as possible and understand there's going to be innocent civilians killed and reoccupy the Gaza Strip if you have to, the whole Gaza Strip. That's all. What do you want from us? You gave it back because you were talked into it by George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and the other madmen in the State Department. They even raised $6 million from American Jews who meant well, liberal groups, in order to turn over remember what the Israelis had built in this desert? It was nothing. It was a desert. Never mind the propaganda. That piece of Gaza was garbage. It was wasteland. The Jews built beautiful communities, schools, hospitals, synagogues, nurseries that produced flowers and vegetables. So the Jews are kicked out. They have to disinter their ancestors' graves because they know the wonderful people who were going to inherit it were going to desecrate the graves of the people who had been lying there. They had to take the synagogues out because they knew the people who came in would urinate in them. But the liberal Jews still had a hope, because they're hopeful, you know, liberal Jews, that if they would give the nurseries over to the Palestinians after the Gaza was given back, they would grow tulips and sell them in Holland. Yeah, so they raised $6 million as compensation for the Jews who built the nurseries. And the minute the Palestinians were let into the nurseries, they stole the water hoses and the pumps and destroyed the nurseries. So far as I know, they never produced a flower. When are you going to wake up and understand the world you are living in, liberals, particularly liberal Jews? What is it going to take for liberal Jews to come to understand the danger they are in? And they're on the wrong side of history, and they're supporting the wrong party. When are you going to come to understand the danger you are in from Islamofascism, not from the Christian audience? When are you going to come to understand that the evangelical, who most of you hate, you think I don't know what you say behind closed doors? You think I'm stupid? The evangelicals who you mock and you hate are the only people who support Israel in the whole world. That tells me you're insane. And that's why I don't even want to talk about this topic. And that's why I'll move on to talk about Petrali's soul. I'd rather talk about Petrali's soul than the soullessness of the American liberal. They're like Golem. They're like wandering Golem. Soulless ghouls wandering around, not even understanding the world they live in. Some of them are very wealthy and very powerful. Oh, yeah. But they don't have a scintilla of understanding of what danger they're in and how to survive. You may know how to make money in your profession. It doesn't mean you're a wise man. Believe me, it doesn't mean you're a wise man. KNEW, San Francisco. We'll talk about cars with Kenny. Welcome to the program, Kenny. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, first I want to thank you for you being you, and God bless you, man. You give me something to look forward to every day.
But well, I am me. I can only be me. I have no choice in the matter.
Yes, man, I appreciate all what you do, and I agree with almost 100% with you on most of your issues. My car question is, a couple months ago you're talking about your Mercedes, about the windshield wipers. Every time you turn them on, when it, you know, at nighttime it was smeared. I never heard what you found out or if they ever found the problem.
I don't know. It like cured itself. It got like healed. I don't know.
Really?
I took it to the dealer a second time. He cleaned them again, and they changed the wiper blades, and it seems to not do it again. Although, in the last rainstorm, it's a layered windshield with a night vision in the glass. It's a very unique and expensive window. I have a feeling that because it's so thick in layers, it's thicker than a normal windshield, there's a differential in temperature between the inside of the window and the outside, because I noticed something, that in a rainstorm, when the wiper moves across the glass, it leaves a slight film. But if I turn it off, a few seconds later, that film dissipates almost immediately. So it's got something to do with temperature, not with actual oil or anything of that nature. It's a temperature differential, so far as I could tell.
What happens if you leave the defrosters blowing up on the window so you heat the window?
I don't know. Maybe that's the solution. I never really needed a defroster, but that might... Well, no, because then it'd be warm inside and cold outside. I don't know. The answer is to not drive in the rain, I found. It's wonderful in the dry weather.
Well, I have the same...
The answer is don't drive it in the rain. You know, it's like the rules of boating. Like the first rule of boating, if you're a boater, is don't go out when there's a small craft advisory. People say, do I have the skills to power a boat? Yeah, don't go out except when the weather's fine and the wind is calm. I mean, you don't want to go out in a gale. So, you know, try to do the best you can in any situation. I drive another car, and it rains now. I'm driving the Navigator, the old Lincoln Navigator, which is the workhorse of the car world. It's a monster with truck tires. You put it in, like, all-wheel drive. This thing, like, is unbelievable. It's like a tank. It's like driving a tank along the highway. And when you park, you don't have any parking neurosis with that car. There's no ding neurosis, I call it. I'm so tired of ding neurosis in parking lots. You know, you don't want that first ding on a new car, do you? You look, like you get out, and you eyeball the left and the right. You come back from the shopping, and you want to see that sun. If someone next to you, let's say, had an older car, you know they're going to ding you. You know they're a liberal, and they hate someone with a newer car. So you can't, the whole time you're away or eating or shopping, all that's on your mind is, did that SOB ding you? So you get back, your heart is palpitating, you got a slight palpitate, and you look down the right side, and his car is gone, and you know he's going to ding you, and they never do. You always assume that they would have done. So I hate Ding Neurosis. That's why I like the Lincoln Navigator. It's got wide, like, running boards. And the door can't even hit the doors. If they open it, it hits the running door, the running board. It's an amazing thing. I wish they'd make a car out of rubber or polyethylene that doesn't scratch. I wish somebody, for years I've been wishing somebody would make a non-scratch surface on a car. There's like a rubber car, sort of, like a Tupperware exterior so that you can leave it in a parking lot and has a perfect sheen, but it never, like, dents or scratches, rather. You don't have to, like, get the Ding Neurosis thing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Now, here's a very important story about Obama and Hillary. I want you to listen to the narcissism and madness in this article. Gay Clinton backers defect to Obama, eroding her base. And there's a long story about the money out of Hollywood and how much they gave to Hillary, and now they're moving to Obama. And David Mixner, a writer and activist who helped longtime friend Bill Clinton win over the gay and lesbian vote. And now Mixner's backing Obama. And then they go on Melissa Etheridge and Hollywood mogul David Geffen, who is now backing Obama, the openly gay Geffen, co-founder of DreamWorks, held a $1.3 million fundraiser for Obama. And then Billie Jean King and Eileen Chaykin, producer of a lesbian show on Showtime, and Bruce Cohen, producer of movies that disgusted me, like American Beauty, which debased an average American and turned him into a sicko. And, you know, everything twisted here. But wait, listen to this. Now listen to this lie. Clinton's support among gay voters helped her hold her own against Obama in the Feb 5 Super Tuesday contests. In California, the most populous state, 63% of people identify themselves as a gay man or woman, voted for Clinton, according to exit polls. But what's the total population? So they're trying to imply that it was because of gays alone that Hillary Clinton was able to sustain a win in California. Now, you'd have to assume, therefore, that about 50% of the population that voted was gay. I can't assume that. But again, this is the kind of rubbish the media publishes because it's an old girls club. And of course, it comes out on Yahoo, which, as you well know, is oriented in a certain direction, all left wing. And they're telling you that whether or not the gays vote for Hillary or Obama is going to determine who wins the election. How come we don't see such an article about conservative talk radio voters support or reject McCain? How come they never refer to you? I told you that you represent the largest single voting bloc in America. I'll repeat it for you. The white male, or if you want to include the white male and white female voters, the largest single voting bloc in America. Talk radio of the type I do, demographically, is predominantly listened to, not solely, but predominantly listened to by white males. Now, ask yourself how come Giuliani wouldn't come before this audience and is now history. Nobody remembers his name. McCain is now following in his footsteps and is committing Harry Caray day by day, step by step. Ask yourself why you have not seen a story in the media which says conservative talk show listeners back X, Y, or Z. They're making believe you don't exist. You're telling me that there are more gays in this country than there are conservative white males? Demographically, that's an impossibility. But you won't see such an article telling you that. Instead, you'll see propaganda again, that Hillary can only win if she panders even more to the gay and lesbian community. So I'm trying to show you the lies, the propaganda that you're reading in the media, and why these primaries are such rubbish. How could it be that you haven't voted yet? I haven't voted yet, basically, yeah, in a primary. But every day, all we see is them singing in Spanish, dancing before a gay assemblage, going before this pressure group, that pressure group, going before Louis Farrakhan's church if necessary, but never once setting foot in front of the conservative white male audience in the United States of America. You don't exist? Well, let me tell you something. Not only do you exist, you control the outcome of this election. Not gays. There aren't enough of them. There are more of you than there are them. That's a naked fact of reality. There are more white, heterosexual, Christian males in America than there are gays in America by a margin of probably, if I have to guess, at least 20 to 1, if not 30 to 1, maybe more. How come you as an audience are never heard from? How come you don't exist? How come John McCain doesn't want to talk to you? How come you're only reading about either illegal alien groups or gay groups or Farrakhan worshippers? How come not you? How come you don't exist, Mr.
Savage.
White male?
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I swear to you, these things you shall have. I'm going to build a hospital, the biggest money can buy, and it will belong to you. And any man, woman, or child who is sick or in pain can go through those doors and know that everything will be done for them that man can do. To heal sickness, to ease pain, free, not as a charity, but as a right. And it is your right. Do you hear me? It is your right. And it is your right that every child should have a complete education. That any man who produces anything can take it to market without paying toll. And no poor man's land or farm can be taxed or taken away from him. And it is the right of the people that they shall not be deprived of hope.
Character Willie Stark from the 1948 movie All the King's Men, sounding much like Barack Obama talking about free health care and, most importantly, that you shall not be deprived of hope. I wouldn't doubt that his handlers have borrowed from the All the King's Men plot and, in fact, probably used some of the rhetoric from the movie or the words themselves. It was really based on Huey Long, nicknamed the Kingfish, an American politician from the U.S. state of Louisiana, a demon cat who was noted for his radical populist policies. And there's much more to it than that, but he created the Share Our Wealth program, with the motto, Every Man a King. And he proposed new wealth redistribution measures in the form of a net asset tax on large corporations and individuals of wealth. You hear this? Of course, he was eventually accused for dictatorial tendencies for his total control of the state. He was a dictator. And that's what we're going to have here unless you're careful. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game on the Savage Nation. We've been talking about cars. Petrolli soul, the soul of a city, the pictures on michaelsavage.com as I meander about the city, the stories on michaelsavage.com I really haven't gotten to, but you can go up there all weekend and look at them. Some of them are wonderful. So let's go to the callers right now. Sacramento, Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. A million compliments. Hey, your show is very precious to the American people. I'll tell you why. For me, I one aspect of my enlightenment has been my appreciation for my fellow Jewish Americans that I never had before. And I had one of my best friends is a Jewish American, and I just never thought about it before. What his family's gone through.
Well, I don't limit it to a race, Mike. I think that love for your fellow American is what you're talking about. No matter what their religion might be or their race, I think is what you're getting at. And certainly that's the message of the Savage Nation. And you say, well, how can you say that when you're so mean-spirited? See, liberals accuse me of things I'm not. They accuse me of being everything under the sun because I'm everything that they're not. They want to help people with my money. And my position is you're not going to take my money to help yourself to it and help those who should be helping themselves, you know. And if a person, for example, eats Krispy Kreme donuts and potato chips and doesn't exercise, and I'm not picking on Krispy Kreme, okay, ice cream, and fat and doesn't exercise and becomes obese, Why is that my problem? Why is it the government's responsibility to treat and care for that person when it is self-indulgence that is the problem? It's not diabetes. The problem isn't diabetes. It's a self-indulgent human being. So you have to cure self-indulgence, not diabetes. You can't treat diabetes in that case. You have to treat the self-indulgent personality. And the way you treat that self-indulgent personality is you tell them, if you're going to eat yourself sick, you're going to have to take care of yourself. I'm not picking up the pieces. We don't have the money. Same with a heroin addict. Not everyone who sticks a needle in their arm is a bad person. Some are good. Some are bad. Some have to be thieves. Some are lucky enough to have enough money. They don't have to be a thief. But it's their problem. It isn't society's problem. So this is where I differ. This treatment racket, to me, is another form of a drug addiction. The treatment racket is a form of drug addiction. It's a sister addiction to the drugs themselves. Or you see a show on TV called Intervention, where they go and someone's an alcoholic or a drug addict, and woo-hoo, I can't control myself. Oh, honey, you can do it. You got to go away. And they come back and they do it again. Well, what are you going to do with people like that? Society has to pick up the pieces every day and take care of them? You can't do it forever. We don't have the funds for it. People are losing their houses right now. There are ghost towns of developments all across America where developers who were once wealthy are going broke. What are you going to – you're going to laugh because the developer who was once wealthy with a private jet went broke? He was a man providing something for society. He was building houses that people lived in. He's building houses. How can you laugh at the fact that he's bankrupt now? Why does that make you feel good? Well, there's a separate story. What I'm saying is, how can you treat everybody's ailment? It's impossible. Now, the Soviet Union promised it, but as you know, they had the worst medical care on the planet. The worst. Well, I mean, we'll have to go to Africa to get the worst. They had a despicable health care system, just as Cuba has a despicable health care system, despite what Steven Spielberg may believe, and the propaganda put out by Reuters and Fidel and Raul Castro. Terrible health care system. Oh, it's universal. It's a universal health care system, but it's worthless. The elite don't go to the universal health care system. They go to the equivalent of where our elites go to, you know. 1-800-449-8255. Ocala, Florida. Kevin, quickly, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Michael? I'm an apostolic Pentecostal, and I just want to make a few points. First, Israel, when I speak of Israel, I mean the Israelites, like in the Bible, need to stick with the fundamentalist Christians and vice versa. The fundamentalist Christians need to stick with Israel. And we always have. And
I know you have. I know you have, but the liberal American Jew doesn't like you.
Well, I know that.
The liberal American Jew who claims they like Israel, and I'm not so sure that they do, distrusts the strongest block of support for Israel, which is you.
Yes. My second point is, in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 12, I'm sure you're familiar with it, God told Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, and I'll curse them that curse you. And if you fast forward to the New Testament, in Galatians chapter 3, it says that Christians, Paul says the Christians are adopted sons of Abraham and heirs according to the same promise. So we both have something at stake. We're both under the same...
I understand this, Kevin. You know that I understand this intuitively. I rail against liberals who distrust or abhor the so-called evangelical. I don't even like the word evangelical. I don't like hearing the word because it's said with a slur. And I understand you people, where you're coming from, and I really respect where you're coming from. Coming up shortly, strangely enough, is an earlier interview I did with Allison Summer on Obama now pandering to Jewish audiences with regard to his support for Israel or alleged support for Israel. I can't wait for you to hear this because it's actually fresh and new. But look, he's a politician like any other, and he's got to go before every pressure group and promise them or say to them what they want to hear. That's politics. We all understand that. We live in the real world. And that'll be up shortly. I know you're going to want to hear that. But there are other stories, you know, that I haven't gotten to yet, and eventually we will get to them in this hour, maybe, or maybe another time on the Savage Nation. If you go to michaelsavage.com, you hear some good news. Egyptian Al Qaeda leader reported killed in South Waziristan airstrike. We're using drones. Thank God, we're starting to knock them off one by one. Bush may take foreign money for presidential library and would consider keeping the donors' names confidential. Clinton has done that. He won't disclose foreign donors to the Clinton Library to this day, nor will Hillary. And now President Bush, you know, unfortunately, is following in Bill's footsteps, which I think is sad. Here's another article. Facing default, some walk out on new homes. How's that one? Walking out. Walking out. 1-800-449-8255. Then, of course, we have the wonderful eye camera pictures on the bottom of michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back. Savage. Barack Obama has now decided to court the Jewish community in his crusade to allay the concerns of American Jews who are worried about Israel's position in an Obama administration. Tel Aviv reporter Allison Kaplan Summer has written an article on why this is happening now. Allison, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
Recently, Obama has started to make statements directly to a popular Jewish newspaper. Why?
Well, up until this point in the campaign, it's been really hard to get Barack Obama himself to talk about Israel or to talk about the Jewish community or to talk about some of the controversial stands associated with his pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. He's let his spokespeople speak for him. He's let Jewish supporters speak for him, and he's stood in the background. And then this week, finally, mounting pressure with Farrakhan endorsing him and Ralph Nader making some remarks about his pro-Palestinian background has brought things to a boiling point. And finally, Barack Obama has had to stand up in front of Jewish audiences and speak to the Jewish media and the Israeli media and talk about where he stands on Israel.
Why now?
Part of it has to do with the fact that he is trying to now cut into Hillary Clinton's base support. He's already got certain groups that don't have an affinity for her. And one of the groups in the Democratic Party that's been the most resolutely pro-Clinton is the Jewish community. If you remember, in the New York primaries, Hillary Clinton won. Obviously, she was a home senator, but a lot of her success there had to do with the Jewish community. And there wasn't a real primary in Florida, but her support there was also very solid. So going into Ohio, which does have a significant Jewish community in areas like Cleveland, that's something that Obama's looking at. He wants to try to take her key support away from her.
Do you think this is related to the pictures of him in the Muslim dress that were recently shown?
It could have to do with the photos that were released and a lot of the rumors going around about his connection to Islam. But a lot of these questions have been around for quite a long time. Don't forget that the pastor of his church, who he considers his spiritual advisor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, not long ago gave an award to Louis Farrakhan, has a close relationship with Louis Farrakhan. And up until this week, no one's really gotten Barack Obama to stand up and say himself in his own words to denounce Farrakhan and what he stands for, which is exactly what Tim Russert did to him on Sunday.
What has Obama been saying to the Israeli newspapers?
He stated very clearly, I am not a Muslim. I am a committed Christian. When I'm sworn in, I swear in honor of my family Bible. I've never been sworn in on the Quran. And then he's made statements saying that he unequivocally supports Israel's security and its right to defend itself. And the way that the Jewish community and the Israeli community is reacting is that they think that he's saying the right things. He's talking the talk, but they're concerned that he has no track record, and they want to see him walk the walk. I think that people who support Israel strongly would like to see him comment on the rocket attacks occurring right now from Gaza into southern Israel, would like to see some sort of statement that isn't generalities, would like to actually talk about policy and talk about how he would handle the current situation if he were president.
What about Obama's statements about Iran?
Yeah, he said that he told the Israeli newspaper in this recent interview, where he's kind of going on the offensive in terms of defending his position on Israel, and he said that if diplomacy doesn't work, that we shouldn't rule out using our power in order to stop Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. Now, that, again, is generalities. He didn't talk specifics, but he was talking tough.
Well, what is Obama's standing in the liberal Jewish community?
I wouldn't say the Jewish community in the United States or in Israel is anti-Obama. Obviously, the Jewish community vote left a lot of the time, and they're loyal Democrats, so they don't have anything against him. I think that he played to some of their sympathy at the debate when he said that he wants to repair the broken relationship between Jews and blacks, and that's something that's very attractive to the Jewish community after, you know, the Nation of Islam and Louis Farrakhan, that they would like, you know, that he seemed to be reaching out and that he wants to be friends again. But as far as Israel's security is concerned, and there we're not just talking about Jews, we're also talking about other parts of the American electorate that are very pro-Israel, like the evangelical groups. I think that he's an unproven quantity, and I think that people, obviously, because he has a Muslim father and had a Muslim grandfather, I think that's, you know, that's raising concerns about, you know, where do his general sympathies lie and would he really, really stand by Israel when the going got tough, even if it meant being extremely unpopular internationally, which is what George Bush has been willing to do and which, frankly, Bill Clinton was willing to do. Israel supporters are concerned about the background of many of Obama's advisors on foreign policy. You've got Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's foreign policy expert and is sometimes called the architect of the Iranian Revolution of 1979, Anthony Lake, Samantha Power. There are some people on Obama's staff that have taken positions that people who support Israel are concerned about, that they feel that they have Palestinian sympathies. And presumably these are the people whose advice that Obama's listening to.
Of the candidates today, who has the most support from the Israeli community, from the Jewish community?
I think that the one that the Jewish community feels most comfortable with at the moment is probably Hillary Clinton. Most of it is obviously because of association, because they feel like Bill Clinton was a strong supporter of Israel and his administration, that he had a track record, and that she'll stand by Israel. She's a senator from New York, which means that she's also, you know, has a strong pro-Israel record. I think that the pro-Israel community feels comfortable with McCain because of his strong stance against terrorism and is willing to stand up. And I think that they have problems with Obama because he's a question mark, because he's an unproven quantity. And I think they're worried. People who care about Israel's survival don't like taking a gamble, and they don't like rolling the dice.
Allison Sommer, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me. It's been great talking to you.
Savage.
The Bush administration has taken up the fight against terrorism, to their credit, but has refused to show the conflict for what it is, a war against Islamofascism. M. Zudi Jasser has written about this critical failure and is with us to talk about it. Mr. Jasser, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
How do you feel Bush has failed to execute the war on terror?
I think what's important for listeners to understand is that where we failed is that he's clearly set the stage perfectly, which is that we are trying to bring freedom and liberty to those that do not have it. And clearly, terrorism is not what we're fighting. We are fighting an ideology that fuels terror, and that is political Islam or Islamism. And I think where he's failed is to identify that. He's talked about freedom, set the stage for it, but then left it abandoned by, in many ways, cozying up to domestic and foreign Islamist organizations by simply using the litmus test of condemnation of terror. And terror is only a tactic, and many of the Islamists are starting to realize that by abandoning terror, they're going to get more achievement of their ends, and thus starting to continue towards that ideology of setting up Islamic states. And we need to start engaging the dissidents, the bloggers of the Muslim world, the women's rights activists, the pluralist activists that are working against establishing Islamic states and Islamic governments. And he really hasn't done any of that. We're still cozying up to Saudi Arabia and other really primary cancer cells in the metastases of political Islam.
Why do you believe Bush hasn't challenged the Islamic terrorist mindset specifically?
I think what's interesting is that we're still afraid of petrodollars being affected. We are in many ways concerned about political correctness, and that's really why our organization, the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, established itself, which is, we say, as God-fearing, devout Muslims, patriotic Americans, we say it's our responsibility to lead this because this is not about Islamophobia. This is about a political doctrine that cloaks itself in our spiritual faith, pretends to be Islam, but is really about a governmental theocracy. And the Bush administration has not felt that, you know, really hasn't gone from the leadership of Reagan, who identified communism as an evil ideology. And the Bush administration has, I think, been too afraid of Islamist groups, painting them as Islamophobes, and instead of being strong enough to say that, well, our quarrel is not with spiritual Islam, our quarrel is with political Islam.
Which of the current candidates, if any, do you feel is going to be strong enough to deal with the terrorists correctly? Is it McCain?
Well, I think that clearly the Democrats don't seem to get it at all. They seem to want to just talk about political correctness and victimization issues and identity or minority politics. I think the Republicans get it better. But some of the candidates were. I think Giuliani was the clearest on this, but he's out of the race. And McCain has, I think, articulated the conflict in Iraq very well. But again, I think as a whole, look at the debates, hour and a half and probably 5 minutes spent on the war on terror. And even that, none of them are addressing ideological issues. So I can't weigh in about any specific candidates, but all I can tell you is that the American people are really not hearing who the next leader of the free world is going to, and what they're going to think about the main ideology we're fighting in the 21st century.
How are anti-Islamist Muslims reacting to Bush's war on terror? I mean the anti-Islamist, the good ones.
Well, I think those are the friends that we need to start fostering and helping, are the anti-Islamist Muslims that do it from a devotional, conservative, family-oriented aspect. And I think many of them are concerned in that they saw us pull out of Iraq in 91. Now they're hearing a possibility of the next candidate, if it's from the left, will pull out our troops. And there's fear that they're going to again be left for dead, either victims of the secular dictators and monarchs or victims of the radical Islamists that come into power. Because I think people forget that the primary targets of radical Islamists is moderate Muslims that are devotional, that believe in their faith, but are targeted because they are the ones most potently able to take away the mantle of faith from the Islamists that have stolen it and hijacked it.
What are these ideas that drive the militant, hateful, throwback Islamist?
Yeah, the ideas that are driving the militant Islamist is the dream of establishing an Islamic state based on what they perceive to be Islamic law or Sharia. Now, I believe in Islamic law at my home and in a personal sense, but I believe that my interpretation that I was taught from my family of Islam is one that you do not mix politics and religion, that government should be pluralistic. There should be not a litmus test of any faith to get into arguing law and legislation. And this is the Western Enlightenment or post-Enlightenment world that we live in the West and our forefathers died for protecting, that we have basically evolved into, that threatens the theocracy of the Islamist. And what fuels their radicalism is a fear of this type of pluralistic, free society, not just democracy, which is elections, but a society based on minority rights and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This is the type of society that they fear having infiltration ideologically into Muslim-majority countries, and that's what they don't want, and that's what terror is all about, is getting us out of their countries, getting the ideas out of Muslim-majority countries, and meanwhile wreaking havoc in secular, successful democracies.
Well, of course you think we're taking political correctness too far, but when does this appeasement stop?
You know, when you talk about political correctness, certainly we are a society that respects minority rights, and we should always be respectful of minorities. and their rights to be equal and have equal access to the law. But what happens is if a ideological threat to our society and our Constitution wraps itself in a faith, then what happens is that our establishment clause that separates religion and politics can sometimes then become a weapon against us, where we don't criticize that political dogma because it says it's a faith. And when, in fact, if we clarify this, and especially the anti-Islamist Muslims start stepping up and saying that, you know what, we should criticize Islamism the same way we criticize communism, socialism, other political parties, or any political entity, because it is a lobby group. It's a political ideology that has transnational goals. And while they may say they follow the rule of law as a minority, if they became a majority, that's the ultimate question. What would their constitution be? How would they govern? What minority rights would they have? And if we don't even get to this debate, political correctness is going to continue to undo us as we protect the rights of Islamists to have foot baths and all these other things that are demanding money from taxpayers for special privileges, when in fact it's separating them and segregating them and allowing them to incubate an ideology that's not consistent with, I believe, secular Western democracy.
What needs to be done to win this war of ideology?
I think from a strategic interest, it's important to understand that the only way we're going to win this ideological battle is for devout, devotional, anti-Islamist Muslims to step up and separate religion and politics, and that's what our American Islamic Forum is all about. That's why we took the side of the passengers in the lawsuit that CARE attempted to do, and thank God the Congress then stepped in and immunized them, because America needs to understand that I believe there's a majority of Muslims, that the Islamists actually don't speak for the majority of Muslims. They only speak for their membership. I believe the majority of Muslims have not bought into the Islamist agenda, and that we are Americans that happen to be Muslim and not Muslims that demand to be Americans.
Mr. Jasser, great analysis. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. It was nice to be on.
Savage.
Along here on the Savage Nation. That was a great interview. Both of them were phenomenal. And the gentleman who I just had on, who I interviewed earlier as an American who happens to be a Muslim, he really has got it just so right. We need to hear more from him. Today is February 29th, which, as you well know, is an unusual odd day. And culturally, there's a tradition where the girl can ask the boy to marry her on today. So if you're thinking of getting married or you're dating somebody, today's the day to ask the guy if he'll marry you. It's allowed on February 29th. Now, what else do you want to talk about? I mean, the best soundbite is the Huey Long character as played by Broderick Crawford in that movie. Unbelievable. People can't believe that when I'm playing All the King's Men from 1949, how it sounds so much like Obama. Could you play an Obama piece that's similar to that, Beowulf? Do you have it ready to go?
I'll be a president who ends the tax breaks for companies that ship our jobs overseas and put a middle-class tax cut into the pockets of working Americans who deserve it.
Now go to All the King's Men.
This much I swear to you. These things you shall have. I'm going to build a hospital. The biggest money can buy. And it will belong to you. Then any man, woman, or child who is sick or in pain can go through those doors and know that everything will be done for them that man can do. To heal sickness, to ease pain, free, not as a charity, but as a right. And it is your right. Do you hear me? It is your right. And it is your right that every child should have a complete education. That any man who produces anything can take it to market without paying toll. And no poor man's land or farm can be taxed or taken away from him. And it is the right of the people that they shall not be deprived of hope.
Not be deprived of hope, from the movie 1949, All the King's Men. Now, you're probably going to hear a lot of this in the media after this show. People are going to talk about it, which is good. but it's a melodramatic story of the corruption of power by an ambitious demagogue based on the governor of Louisiana, as you well know, if you know anything about Huey Long. But in the at the end, he becomes just what he sounds like, a demagogue, and he gets there through his charisma, his populist message, wealth redistribution measures in the form of a net asset tax on large corporations. That's the Democrat approach every election. Taxing people of who are rich, meaning anyone who makes more than $75,000. He also says that he is going to give hospitals to everyone, medical care to everybody. And it sounds exactly like Hillary, but more like Obama today than it ever did. And that's why when I play for you all this piece from All the King's Men from 1949, you see how the demagoguery hasn't really changed. It's exactly the same message. Exactly the same message you're hearing, frankly, both from Hillary Clinton and from Barack Obama. Long created the Share Our Wealth program in 1934 with the motto, Every Man a King. And again, taxes, charisma, social reform, forceful action, mainly hope. Mainly hope. But of course, when he got power, Huey Long, who this character is based upon, he became what he always was, a sleazy demagogue. And at the height of his popularity, the colorful and flamboyant Huey Long was shot on September 8th, 1935, at the Louisiana State Capitol in Baton Rouge. He died 2 days later at the age of 42. His last words were reportedly, God, don't let me die. I have so much left to do. The true believer. 1-800-449-8255. Remember, you heard it here first in the Savage Nation. Talk show hosts around the country are cursing themselves that they didn't find this first. I want to thank my producer, Beowulf Rockland, for digging this one up. What would you like to talk about? What would you like to talk about? Sacramento, Ron, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I think that those clips were great that you just played, and I was just thinking, listening to those after you repeated them again, that there's only one person that probably could follow the genius of Michael Savage that could unravel and uncover that those clips and make the comparison that you did, and that would be the great writer who, like yourself, also a great writer, and that would be Rod Serling from The Twilight Zone.
I don't know if that's a compliment, but thank you. Yeah, no, I'm a great analyzer of things, political and otherwise. You know, I walk around San Francisco, I'm just amazed at the hatred from the liberal establishment towards a guy like me who actually embodies more of San Francisco than they do. They're the Huey Longs. They're the interlopers who've come here and stolen the city from the fair-minded city people of this city. They've hijacked San Francisco. Just as Islam has been hijacked by the Islamists, San Francisco's liberal traditions have been hijacked by radicals who disguise themselves as liberals. Consequently, they put in one fraudulent leader after another, whether it be a police chief who can't lead, who the police do not respect, or one after the other. They promise the people everything, and basically they rob the taxpayer. So they're all like Huey Long. Or you take these supervisors, one of whom is soon about to go away in an orange jumpsuit for an alleged land deal on Telegraph Hill, one of those vile little men who condemned me in a proclamation from the supervisors. He will eventually, according to what I hear in the streets, be taken out in a pair of handcuffs. And one by one, these corrupt little men who chose to attack me are going to be taken down by their own corruption and their own greed. It has nothing to do with me. It's not that they're my friends. It's that they've made so many enemies through their lies and their corruption. One supervisor after another in this city are going to be taken away, one after the other, by what I hear. It has nothing to do with me. It's not that the people love me that much, the leadership. It's all about who they've burned along the way. I love it. They claim they're for the people, yet they buy houses at half price. They get a house, for example, during one of them, who's about to go away, according to what I hear, bought a house at the height of the real estate boom for half of what it was valued at, in exchange for which he allegedly rezoned something in a very important area. Now, Duke Cunningham, who was a true American hero, an ace from Vietnam, a Vietnam fighter pilot ace, is in prison for 8.5 years for a very similar deal, where he bought a house from someone at a lower price than it was worth in exchange for favors as a politician. And that's why I say, be very careful with those who promise you the world, because very often they're the ones who we all know are the most corrupt. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let's take a trivial call. Portland, Oregon, Patrick, welcome. What's on your mind?
Your dog looks like a Don King Jr., but my dog looks like a Maltese pure white. I have a 115-foot boat I just bought. Took possession of it from the company that made Tiger Woods' boat.
You say 150? Yeah, my dog Teddy is a natural poodle who is untrimmed, so he looks like a teddy bear. And he affectionately has what we call a poofro.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It looks like Don King Jr.
Well, he doesn't. He looks like a poodle who hasn't had his hair cut. So what are you going to do with your boat?
Well, my dog is a Maltese, which has, like, silky white hair, and he likes to ride on the bow of the boat, which just blows back. So I got this collar, and it works perfectly for the dog. Keeps it warm.
Yeah, no, Teddy's afraid of the boat. He likes to be in bed. He's a bed potato. Thanks for the call. He doesn't like rolling around on a boat very much. Portland, Oregon. Jeremy on KXL. What's on your mind? What do you want to know, Jeremy?
Dead on about San Francisco. My dad was raised in San Francisco, and it used to be a great city. The reason I'm calling.
It still is a great city. It's the leadership that is totally rotten. A fish rots from the head down. This city has rotten people in the supervisory positions. They pander to the lowest common denominator, illegal aliens, and other groups that really don't speak for the city. They don't speak for the working class of the city, even though they pretend they do. They're vile, and they're not part of this city. Most of them are carpetbaggers from somewhere else who disguise themselves as San Franciscans.
That's right. I totally agree with you. I'm calling because I'm a young guy. I'm married. I've been listening to you since I graduated high school, almost 10 years now, and I've got two young kids. I was raised by a very wise father, and the advice that you were dispensing earlier to the caller who was in a quandary about what to do with his vocation is the same advice my dad has always given me, and I just wanted to say that.
Right, and he needed somebody to say to him, do the vocation and take your love for design and make that your avocation. Making a living is number one. It's hard for young people to understand that. But there's no such thing as a free lunch out there. You got to work for it. No one owes you anything. It's the Savage Nation. The stories are on MichaelSavage.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Savage.